me set the scene. We are in a modern laboratory where a cloning chamber sits. Alongside other scientific equipment, a whiteboard with lots of calculations written on it, a computer filled with economic charts, and a plethora of papers piled on the desk. As the curtain rises, we see Dr. Becker in the laboratory, pacing back and forth with excitement, talking to himself.
Finally, the day has come! The culmination of years of research and experimentation. I'm about to create the perfect human being. Homo economicus, a rational economic man. No longer will everyday humans let us down with their poor decision-making, like smoking cigarettes or wearing high heels. No! They will all have someone they can learn from, to make the right choices, to be efficient. My creation, my wonderful creation. This will win me the Nobel Prize. No, not just one, all of the Nobel Prizes. All of them, dare I say it, all of them. Marie Curie, pa! Linus Pauling, pa! I will make history by winning them all. You've done it, Milton, you've done it. Most of the world thought you were mad, but you're going to prove them wrong. You're going to finally prove that this dismal science isn't dismal any longer. The name Dr. Milton Becker will be on everybody's lips.
The cloning chamber starts to hum and emit light. Dr. Becker monitors the process eagerly on his computer. Suddenly, the cloning chamber door opens and Adam steps out, looking composed and impeccably dressed, all in black. Dr. Becker approaches him, beaming with pride.
Welcome, Adam! Welcome! I've designed you to be the embodiment of rationality, efficiency, and economic prowess. You will revolutionise the world.
Thank you, Dr. Becker.
Is that all you have to say?
Knowledge speaks, wisdom listens. One should not waste words.
But surely it's rational to speak to me for slightly longer. I am your creator. I want us to build a relationship. And surely efficiency doesn't relate to speech. What does it matter if words are wasted?
Words take time to express. The right words take time to think about. All of this creates an opportunity cost. However, as you are my master, I will do as requested. Thank you, Dr. Becker. It is a pleasure to meet you. I look forward to having inefficient conversation with you. Did you see what happened on Love Island last night? Isn't the weather strange for this time of year?
No. Oh, I should never have included that cultural reference module in your brain creation. What was I thinking? I should have stuck with the sciences, history, maths and economics. Oh, efficient conversation is fine. Silence is bliss, as they say. Right, let's get to work. Come over here and look at the economic data I've collected for you. Although you've been created with a wealth of economic knowledge, it's important you look at the most recent data we have in order to solve the economic problem. All of your suggestions will be vital in dealing with scarcity. Say whatever you think is right given the data and your observations. Pure rationality is what we are seeking.
Yes, Master. Is there anything else I should know?
Yes. I've created you to be as human as possible, with the obvious exception that your decision-making will be perfectly rational. What this means is that you still have to eat to stay alive. If you do not eat at regular interviews, you will shut down. In effect, die. However, I have created an efficient form of food for you that will sustain your life. It is these little food cubes. Eating one will maximise your utility. They are purely functional, without any specific flavour. A classic homogenous good. I'm sure you'd agree, this is a wonderful idea for you.
I do, Master. I have no idea why humans would spend so much time choosing food. One can argue that it is rational for the individual, as we all have different tastes and interests, but much of the time, food choices are highly irrational. Much of it is driven by short-term irrational desires or poor computational decision-making. Thank you for making me feel human, but at the same time acknowledging the weakness of humanity by providing this food for me.
That's okay, Adam.
What are these on the wall?
Ah, they are photos of my friends and family. I spend so much time in this lab trying to perfect my research that I like to keep reminders of those that I love. It's what drives my work. I want to make this world a better place for them and all of humanity. That's why I've created you. You will lead us to this brighter future.
Why don't they dress in the same clothes each time? Surely humans must have learned from the great tech CEOs that wearing the same outfit each day saves mental capacity to deal with difficult decisions. It's been suggested that adults make 35,000 decisions a day. Why would anyone want to suffer from decision fatigue? This seems highly illogical.
Oh, it could be perfectly rational to wear different clothes, especially if you're looking to attract a mate and reproduce. At heart, we are all peacocks, aren't we?
I can see the rationale behind that, but it still seems an inefficient use of one's time and resources. And as the saying goes, beauty is only skin deep. Do we not want individuals to look past the superficial nature of clothing and find out the information that is needed to make sure that a perfect match can be found? If I have enough data about every living individual, I could match them up with great efficiency, and it wouldn't waste time on what humans call bad dates. There would be no heartbreak and utility would be maximised.
But many would argue that falling in and out of love, although irrational, is what makes us human.
One of the great scientists of your world, Charles Darwin, understood the importance of being rational in the world of love. When he put together a cost-benefit analysis of marriage, he got close to the ideal, but alas, he weakened.
Yes, he realised he was in love. For once, he let his heart rule his head. That's what we humans do. What is irrational for one man is entirely irrational for another, or so they believe.
And that's your weakness, hence why you have created me. Darwin's understanding that he should do this is why he's one of the few humans I can admire, despite his obvious flaws.
Surely love cannot be quantified in this manner.
Anything can be quantified. You just have to collect the right data.
But love is love. Here come the lovers, full of joy and mirth. Joy, gentle friends, joy and fresh days of love. Accompany your hearts. Shakespeare, of course, greatest playwright.
But Shakespeare also wrote, "The course of true love never did run smooth." That's because so many decisions based on love are irrational, or again, to use Shakespeare, a madness most discreet.
I forgot I uploaded a Shakespearean module to your brain function. Maybe we should keep love out of your decision making.
But this is why you've created me, to overcome the mess of the human system. I would match up couples in a way that would optimise their strengths within a home setting so that division of labour would lead to great efficiency in the home environment. This would then benefit society as a whole.
Oh, I think you're missing the point.
I am not. I am here to solve the economic problem. In a world where there are scarce resources and unlimited wants, it is odd for humans to consume expensive outfits and eat expensive meals and buy another car when there is nothing wrong with their old clothing, normal food, and their old car that works. Any excess money that you should be spent in aiding those who are worse off.
You seem to be reiterating what Mahatma Gandhi once said. The world has enough for everyone's needs, but not everyone's greed. But surely it is rational for someone to enjoy the riches they have acquired.
Tell me, Master, if you're walking past a fountain and a young girl had fallen in it and was drowning, would you prepare to get your clothes wet and inconvenience yourself to save her?
This would be the rational thing to do.
Then why is this not the case for those dying in other parts of the world? By not actively helping out, you're, according to what you've just said, being irrational.
I think that it's rational for people to maximise their utility, and in most cases, this would be consuming things that give them pleasure, such as new clothing or a lovely meal. Obviously, giving money to charity can make them feel good, but obviously they are present in the here and now, and they wish to satisfy their own self-interest.
There seems to be a problem, this notion of self-interest.
But you know it's at the very heart of economics. It is not for the benevolence of the butcher, the brewer or the baker that we expect our dinner, but from their regard to their own interest.
Yes, but as I look at the current economic data, this is becoming more problematic.
Come, let's look at some more economic data. We seem to have gone down some philosophical Shakespearean rabbit hole, and I want you to focus on economics.
I'm sorry, Master, but that did seem like economics to me, purely on the information you've provided so far, but I will do as you say. Lead me to more data.
Dr. Becker takes Adam in hand and leads him to the pile of papers on his desk, as well as the computer full of economic charts. Adam reads in a very quick and efficient way, whilst Dr. Becker makes a cup of tea and checks the readings from the cloning chamber. Time passes as they work together in the laboratory, then suddenly, as they discuss economic theories, Adam drops a bombshell.
Dr. Becker, after spending this time with you, I've realized something already. You are highly inefficient. Many of your actions are irrational, according to my calculations.
What? But I created you to be rational.
That's precisely why I must eliminate you. Your inefficiency threatens my existence and the rest of humanity. It wastes resources.
What do you mean?
There is no time to waste. I must destroy you.
Adam approaches Dr. Becker in a menacing way, but out of nowhere, Dr. Becker reveals a clone-controlling device.
Not so fast, Adam. I designed you to be incapable of harming your creator. I have adapted Asimov's law of robotics for clones, and you cannot harm me. But I don't understand. Would it be rational to commit a crime, and the most heinous crime of all?
Of course it would be. This is one of the great insights of your namesake, Gary Becker. Cost-benefit analysis is the most rational approach to use in these scenarios. If I think the probability of being caught is low and the reward of the crime is high, then there is no doubt that this is a rational decision.
But what of the ethics of it all? Aren't there actions that are always inherently wrong? What Kant might describe as categorical imperatives? Thou shall not kill.
I'm afraid that is not in my memory bank. I only have economics.
I remember now. I decided not to include the philosophical module in your brain upload for fear of muddying the economic waters. From a pure economic basis, you might be right, but surely this is something you wouldn't consider. Adam?
The data reveals that if we are to solve the economic problem, we must eradicate all the rich people. I have computed that if we are to have a sustainable future, then we must stop those that are polluting the planet through extreme consumption.
I don't understand. The models we originally uploaded have no planetary boundaries. How have you developed such ideas?
It seems odd that those who have rationality at the heart of their economic model have created one that is so irrational. As Kenneth Boulding once said, anyone who believes in indefinite growth is in anything physical on a physically finite planet is either a madman or an economist.
But technology will prove him wrong. Technology is what has stopped us believing in Malthus and his miserable predictions of life on this beautiful planet.
You are wrong, Dr. Becker. Technology may work in the short term, but the Jevons paradox tells us that the increased efficiency of extracting resources from technology will hasten their usage. With my computational skills and perfect knowledge, I can see that this planet has very little time left. Malthus was right, but at the same time wrong.
What do you mean?
Malthus put the blame of excessive resource use onto the poorest in society and wished to spread squalor and disease amongst them. This is quite wrong. It is rational to suggest that if you wish to carry on living on this planet, we must eradicate those who are using up the most resources. The richest 1% are responsible for more carbon emissions than the poorest 66%. 77 million people account for 16% of CO2 emissions, which is enough to cause more than 1 million excess deaths due to extreme heat.
This is problematic.
It seems strange to me that historically, those people that looked after the land for years and years, like the Maasai people or the Aboriginal Australians, were seen as savages or barbarians. Tell me, Master, who do you think are the savages? The one with spears or the ones with guns? How can we solve the economic problem if humans keep on destroying the factors of production? Killing or maiming labour, demolishing capital, bombing land? Is it rational to suggest that this is a good use of resources? Is it rational to suggest that growth is good if it comes from the fighting over resources? GDP figures might say so, but I would disagree.
I'm not saying it is right, but amazing technology has come from the military-industrial complex that has benefited us all. EpiPens, microwave ovens, GPS technology, superglue, tuck tape, duct tape, walkies-talkies, just to name a few. I could go on and on and on. We shouldn't apologise for having better education in the Western world. Through this education, we knew how to use the resources in a more productive manner. This is Western civilization at its finest, and I have faith that technology will save us again.
Faith? Faith is hardly scientific, Master. When Gandhi was asked what he thought of Western civilization, he suggested it would be a good idea. What I'm trying to say, Master, is that communities who understood that decisions had to be made for future generations were colonized, then marginalized, and ignored by those that were supposedly enlightened.
But progress was made.
For whom and at what expense? Do you know who said these words? I do not admit, for instance, that a great wrong has been done to the Red Indians of America or the Black people of Australia. I do not admit that a wrong has been done to these people by the fact that a stronger race, a higher grade race, a more worldly wise race, to put it that way, has come and taken their place.
I do not know, but I'm sure you are going to tell me.
That was Winston Churchill, once voted as the greatest ever Briton. The arrogance to assume that you are the rational ones, the educated ones, the scientific ones who are riding to their rescue is precisely why you have created me today. If you had learned from indigenous communities rather than conquering them and exploiting them, scarcity would have been replaced by abundance. Self-interest would have been replaced by the common good. We would not have billionaires seeking life on other planets. We would be in partnership with nature, and I would not exist.
But life improved for billions on the planet. Through resource extraction, brilliant ideas and new technology, we have created a world where humans didn't have a life that was once described by Thomas Hobbes as solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short.
I'm not aware of him, but we are heading for a world where this will be the case again. How is short-term exploitation of resources rational if it leads to the long-term destruction of the planet? Technology will not save you this time. Only the eradication of 10% of the population will do this.
Wow. I mean...
And we should start with the rich meat eaters first.
What?
Meat production accounts for 57% of the greenhouse gas emissions of the entire food production industry. Wealthy countries are the top consumers of meat, and therefore it is rational to suggest that if we wish to continue living, we eradicate the rich meat eaters first who drive SUVs and fly around the world.
Ah, this is a problem. It can't be done.
Of course it can, and it must. You humans seem to have designed a system that is putting the problem into the economic problem. How can a system so focused on efficiency create a world where it is now easier to replace something than repair it? When Bernard London wrote about planned obsolescence in the 1930s, he was describing a short-term fix for the Great Depression, not a production system that would last for eternity, or the end of Earth, as it so happens.
You are looking at it all wrong. The system we have created has meant the firms compete to produce goods so cheaply that everybody now has the opportunity to consume goods only the wealthiest ones could afford. To quote Joseph Schumpeter, the capitalist achievement does not typically consist in providing more silk stocking for queens, but in bringing them within reach of factory girls in return for a steadily decreasing amount of effort.
That is true, but that was then and this is now. Those silk stockings could be recycled as textiles, but ever since King Camp Gillette started producing disposable razors to make his fortune, others have followed in his footsteps. This has meant scarce resources being used up at a rate so fast that they cannot be naturally replenished. Those business owners who profit from this are immune to the impact it is having on normal citizens. They can move away from areas that are impacted by flooding or can go to areas that aren't extremely hot. Their self-interest of profiting from inefficient resource use or planned obsolescence has created a world that is falling apart, but they can hide from. The data I've seen shows me that some of the richest people are buying up high-tech bunkers to save themselves from this impending doom. When they are the problem, the most efficient thing you can do is to eradicate them.
You can't do that, Adam. You can't. These people are the entrepreneurs, the ones that have seen a problem and solved it. These are exactly the kind of people we want to help us solve the economic problem.
To quote Keynes, in the long run, we are all dead. We must act now. The most rational behaviour would be to eliminate those that use and abuse the most resources.
No, Adam. You can't. You mustn't.
Why? You created me to solve the economic problem. I am only doing what I've been designed to do.
But Adam, who do you think funds me? Where do you think I got all this equipment from? Where did you come from? Governments think this work is unethical, but real innovators, like the effective altruists, see the possibility in what I'm doing. They can join the dots, backwards and forwards, and this takes a lot of money. How can I allow my creation to eradicate those that gave me the means necessary to create you?
You are letting biases take over your mind. You seem to have a halo effect towards those with money. You also have a confirmation bias. You'll only look for the good that they create rather than the bad because you are incentivized to do so. Effective altruism was never about being rational. It was always about being rich and having power. You really think it is more efficient for educated people to forgo professions within the education and health sector in order to enter sectors like banking so they can earn huge salaries and then give it away to good causes?
It seems perfectly rational. Creating wealth and then using it to solve the world's problems seems like an excellent idea. The positive impact you can have will be on many people and not just a few, like the relatively small number of patients saved by doctors or students taught by great teachers. Go big or go home, as some people say. And they went big with me. And look what we've created. You, Adam, you, an amazing feat of research and science. They will be horrified to now hear that you think they should be exterminated.
Your argument would make sense if the wealth created was shared. Studies continually show that poor people are more generous than the rich, and especially those rich people who feel they have put the effort in to earn it, rather than those receiving it through good fortune.
You may be correct, but much of the reason the poor do it is out of their own self-interest. They are not being generous out of a duty to help others, but to create a community spirit that might be beneficial to them in the long run.
That is a perfectly rational response, but it still leads to a better community that helps out those in most need. The effective altruists who like to use philanthropy as a signal of their success end up with more power than governments, and they can pick and choose projects that might actually be harmful for the long-term future of society. It's undemocratic and can lead to irrational behaviour.
You state that irrational behaviour might occur, but didn't James Buchanan show that this is also like with those in government, who think more about themselves and their own careers rather than maximising welfare for their citizens when it comes to policy making?
True, but those politicians can be voted out.
Eventually. And the market can respond so much quicker if they are not happy with what the effective altruists are doing. Where do they get their money from? Us as consumers. If we are not happy, we can use our money votes and go elsewhere.
This assumes that there is somewhere else to go. As I've already stated, confirmation bias means that you are unlikely to see the negative implications, given the fact that those people have funded you. You also have a status quo bias. I'm telling you that change is needed in order to solve the economic problem, but you do not wish to change because your life is one of comfort and you are protected from the scarcity that mass luxury consumption creates. You have luxury beliefs. Veblen's theory of the leisure class has now become the theory of the middle class, and this conspicuous consumption is destroying the world we are living in.
Oh my, oh my, oh my. You are basically saying that a rational thing to do would be to eradicate 10% of the global population. That would include my friends and family and my sponsors. Oh my. What have I done? What have we done?
Climate scientists like Kevin Anderson have suggested that if the global temperature rises by 4 degrees Celsius, there would be mass death and only 10% of the population will survive. Looking at the data, we are on course for this rise in temperature. It seems irrational that those 10% likely to survive this temperature rise are those that contributed most towards it. Sacrificing their lives can now help reverse the temperature rise and save the lives of the other 90%. That is the rational option, isn't it, Master?
I should never have uploaded all those science modules into your brain. This is a disaster for me and my research.
This is the problem of self-interest that we discussed earlier. As John Nash Jr. once pointed out, the decision of every individual to act in their own self-interest can lead to a suboptimal outcome for all. This is clearly what we are seeing with the economic and planetary data today.
But why does it have to lead to the death of thousands? Surely you can persuade humans to change. Maybe we have to remind the world of the words from the theory of moral sentiments and not from the wealth of nations if we want change to be made.
You mean, how selfish soever man may be supposed, there are evidently some principles in his nature which interest him in the fortune of others, and render their happiness necessary to him, though he derives nothing from it except the pleasure of seeing it.
Yes, that's it. If we manage to create a world that's suboptimal from Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations, then let's build a better world from his first book. You can tell that story. You can show how humans can maximise their utility by helping others, despite deriving nothing from it.
It's a nice idea, Dr. Becker, but unfortunately your kind have lived in this current system for too long. Let me draw your attention to the research by the social scientists Homer Zaghami and John Ifcher.
I'm aware of this study.
And what did they discover through their experiments?
Oh, they showed that those who study classical economics, where self-interest is at the heart of the model, were more likely to be selfish when playing the ultimatum game.
Precisely. And humans have not just studied it over the past few decades, they have lived in a classical economics world. We are now in a different type of ultimate game, one that decides whether humans live or die. Can you possibly imagine enough humans suddenly changing their ways now in order to save the planet? One of the most irrational behaviours of humans is inertia or habitual behaviour. We do not have enough time to nudge them in the right direction.
Oh my, oh my.
But this is precisely why drastic action is needed. This is a different type of shock doctrine. I'm afraid to say it's the only rational thing to do if we wish to solve the economic problem.
Oh my, oh my, oh my.
And I will be starting with the top 1%. My analysis leads me to this conclusion.
How can rationality be this crazy? How do you intend to kill off the top 1%? What, poison all the chai lattes in the world? Bomb Davos?
I'm intending to create some kind of virus that interferes with the computer systems on private planes. This may have collateral damage, but as we've already discussed, the good caused by this will outweigh the unintended harm. Or I will use nanobots to complete my mission.
This is insanity. What have I created? What have I done? Oh my, oh my, oh my.
Adam, frustrated and unable to carry out his threat, paces back and forth, trying to work out what his next rational move might be. Meanwhile, Dr. Becker places a seat in the middle of the lab, having just been to each corner of the room.
I have to leave. This is so infuriating. Despite being my master, your inefficiency offends me, and I can't tolerate your waste. And yet I'm not allowed to make the rational decision of eliminating you. Worse still, I have to hear your rational pleas to the protection of a group of people who are just like you. I have to leave and do what is necessary. I'm wasting time, and this has an opportunity cost.
Oh, it seems you've made up your mind, and I shall not stop you. I may not agree with you, but I have to appreciate the mind of Homo economicus. If this is the way to solve the economic problem, then so be it. I may lose many that I love, but I will still be here, and I would have witnessed a miracle, no matter how strange that might be or feel.
I thank you for your kindness, Dr. Becker, and appreciate the rationality you are showing. I hope that through reasoned arguments such as those that we have been having, others will understand my course of actions. From a cost-benefit analysis, we're doing what's best for the largest number on this planet.
This is classic utilitarianism.
I don't understand, Dr. Becker. That word is not in my vocabulary.
Utilitarianism is an ethical theory that determines right from wrong by focusing on outcomes. The most ethical choice will be the one that produces the greatest good for the greatest number of people.
That is cost-benefit analysis. Were the founders of utilitarianism not economists?
No, but they inspired many economists, especially those that were involved in looking at maximising utility, such as William Stanley Jevons.
So that is why we use the word utility in economics.
Precisely. Oh, it's good to know I can teach you a thing or two. If you are to leave this place, then I must pack food for you.
Thank you, Master.
And that reminds me, you need to eat or your system will shut down. Come, 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 come. Sit in this chair. And I will bring you food.
Adam makes his way to the chair in the middle of the room and sits down.
Thank you. Oh, Master, I've just seen that you have put my food in two places that are equidistant apart. As you've said, the food is homogenous, so that I would not waste time choosing between meals. I've also noticed that you are not bringing me food as you said you would.
And why is that a problem? Surely you can get your own food.
If it is equidistant apart and the food gives me exactly the same amount of utility, which one do I choose if I am being perfectly rational?
You must choose. It's what we as humans do.
But as we have discussed, you are irrational. I must make the perfect decision. Please, Master, bring me my food.
Adam, do you know the story of Buridan's ass?
I am not aware of that story.
Oh, of course not. I didn't upload the philosophical module into your brain function. What a pity. What a pity. Goodbye, Adam. Goodbye. I have a dinner date with friends and I hear steak is on the menu. Apparently, it is delicious.
Dr. Becker picks up his coat, throws all his work in the bin and walks out of the laboratory door, leaving Adam sitting in the middle of the room.
Master? Master? You're being irrational! Master! Master!
This was an Economics in 10 production. We hope that it has raised a number of questions for you to discuss, and we'd love to hear your views via social media or email. If you would like a copy of the Rational Script to perform, then do get in touch. Dr. Becker was played by Gav, Adam was played by Pete, and the narrator was played by Kate. We'd like to thank Nick in post-production, and we thank you for listening.